yes, my friends. It's the Sharon Sleeve Show.
Take my hat, take my coat, take my gloves, I'll take a cup. Take my money, but I'm begging, please don't take my shoe. Take my house, take my clothes, take my wife, lighten up my load. Take my feet, you can take my toes, but please don't take my shoe.
From the downtowniest part of New York City, the city that never sleeps, the city that never weeps, the city where nothing keeps. Coming to your live on WCJD 90.2, New York, high atop the Empire State Building.
Oh yes, my friends, here we are, and what a crooked, dark landscape of trees and tiny abandoned shanties and shacks. There are two kinds of shanties. The sea shanty, a song to sing aboard a pirate ship, and then a shanty town, a little village of improvised homes. Say, so a shanty is an improvised home. So we have these trees falling down about our shanties, and see if you will make out this other noise. This, my friends, is the sound, the going away sound, I should say, of the newspaper. I'm holding in my hands an actual newspaper from the present day. It's not an archaeological discovery. It is current. It's not covered in soil or dinosaur bones. But I've been reading the newspaper lately. The actual paper. Decided to take a stand against the nothingness of the internet, the materialistness of it. Finally exhausted me to the point where I thought, well, I'm going to fetch something from the old days. Is it still barely hanging on? I don't know if there's a time stamp on this, a date of expiration for the actual physical newspaper. Whether forecasters have said 5 years, 10 years, then there won't be a single newspaper or magazine around, or maybe they're not sure, maybe they think somehow they'll hang on, or possibly there'll be some sort of situation as we have with the public libraries. Maybe the government will step in and say we need to keep these things as national treasures. Or you can't hold on to a treasure like that, though. I've been reading the newspaper with a slightly more... I keep up with the news to a certain level, but I've been reading the newspaper with an interest in following the election, national election, the local elections here, which I don't often do, because it's so difficult to penetrate the fuzz of the talk. Everyone, they want something, they're trying to convince you, and the laws of truth and justice don't quite seem to apply. So one person has one story that's full of half-truths, and the other person has another story full of half-truths, and who wants to bother? So I like to take a glance at them, and get a feel, mild feel, an intuitive sense. Is this an honest person? Is this a person I trust? Do they have the interests of governing inside them, or do they just have their own self-interest? They're trying to win something or become something they're not. Is it natural? A quick little tally of those things. And the policy positions seem almost secondary, because it's quite so often the case that it's not possible for them to do anything about those policy things. It's out of their hands, or they change their minds. So things are either out of their hands, or their minds are changeable. So there's a great deal of inflexibility and flexibility. Their minds can move, their opinions and policy choices change, and then they can't do much about it, about what their fellow politicians will want or say or do. So as we lay people like to say when we go into the museum, we look at art, we say, I know what I like. I can't say what it is. That's how I pick horses at the track, and that's how I pick politicians. A sip of tea. Drink only the finest or second finest type of tea. There are only three types. The third type is the worst sort of tea. There are two very fine types, and then sharp drop off to the third type. Terrible tea, sometimes called rotten tea, and rotten terrible tea being the really dregs of the bad teas. I drink the finest or second finest. Another sip, just talking about it makes me need more. Now, one thing about the newspaper that I've noticed, many of these staff people, the main reporters and even the secondary reporters, I suppose, are required on a daily basis to churn out mass numbers of words. So maybe the reporter has two stories on the front page. So Ben Lubsdorf. I don't know how to say it exactly. Most names I can sort of potter out. Even if I've never said them before in my life, I can simply, with my long life of phonetic to word understandings, patch them out and get it right. But I don't know this one. Lubsdorf. Ben Lubsdorf. Could be Lubsdorf. Leb. Anyway. Poor Ben, it seems he has to write 3 or 4 articles a day, and not short ones either, long. It's another thing I noticed. Everything on the internet seems rather short. Maybe that's a misperception, but as I look at these newspapers, I start reading them, massive amounts of text, for small things, all they make this, they seem to have to reach a word count, a required word count, 800, 1,000, 2,000 words, I'm not sure. But it's too much. To start off on the front page with what seems like a pleasant little bit on the re-election, and then you flip to page A6, and all of a sudden it takes up the whole page. It's a lot. It's a lot to make Ben Lubsdorf write. I'm picturing all these reporters exhausted and really not churning out copy that they're distinctly proud of because they're so hard-pressed by time and by word counts. 3 articles a day, 4 articles. And then I saw a job advertisement for a local reporter, and I had that confirmed. They're looking for someone to write 3 or 4 articles a day. 3 or 4? I believe in the old days you might have to write 1 or 2 articles a week. And you'd spend more time with the craft of it. With the story of it. Now it's just... get it... so there's no voice for most of these. You get the voice of... pardon me, I have to cough. In the opinion pages, you get a sense of voice. But for most, these articles all could have been written by a robot. There's not much that distinguishes them. And maybe they shouldn't be, but I like a little voice, and even in my dull news. I like to be able to tell who it is that... whose article I'm reading. In the same way you like to know who it is that's speaking to you. Just that subtle sense of voice. And you don't get it with this. You could take anyone's name and put it with anyone's article and... now maybe it is that I need to read these newspapers over the course of time and I'll start to get that. And I'll let you know if I do. I should mention that I have a number of injuries. I'm very injured at the moment. Covered in injuries. In the old days, I don't know when the old days exactly might be where I'm pointing to, but in the old days, injuries and damages were much more visible. So, people were driving around on the highway with very damaged and rusty old vehicles, jalopies with pieces of wood on the doors, or cardboard covering the window, and huge tapestries of rust along one side, one tire very small, and then if you would walk through the city or the town, you would see an injured population. There would be people with crutches, people with their arms in slings. You'd see casts, people with their legs in casts, or their arms, or their wrists, neck braces. Huge bandage situations on the top of someone's head. Now, it wasn't that everyone was much more clumsy, or that we didn't take care of our vehicles. Although maybe both of those things are true, maybe we were far more injured in those old days. We were always falling down the stairs, there was no safety anywhere, cutting ourselves with every knife we touched. But it seems to me one of the features of the modern life is that we've figured out a way to make these things invisible. The damage to our cars, the damage to ourselves. Somehow we've figured out some situation where you break your leg and they put it in an invisible splint and you're still walking along, maybe with a limp, but you don't need crutches. You rarely see people with crutches. You rarely see people with their arms in those dramatic slings. Those arm slings are like eye patches, pirates' eye patches. They're charming. I miss seeing them. I strangely find it comforting to see someone with their arm in a sling. And I don't know if I should make the connection too strongly between the pirate patch and the arm sling, because the pirate patch, if I see anyone... and I don't anymore, no one seems to wear them. Despite the fact that they are darkly attractive and interesting, intriguing. Intriguing. There is an element of danger, so you sort of want to caretake someone when their arm's in a sling, and you want to stare at from a safe distance someone, maybe even follow, tail them, anyone with a pirate patch. Find out what they're up to. Look at this fellow with the pirate patch. What's he doing? You should follow him. Oh, look at this other fellow here. He's broken his arm. Oh, here we should go see if he needs some help. You carry something for him. Get him a cup of tea. But nowadays, we're all walking around with our injuries, and it's an invisible situation. We've very strongly attached ourselves to the cosmetic requirements, the outer shell of ourselves and our things. One part of that, I think, is with the disposable nature of our things. So cars perhaps don't have the life they might have had in the olden days. And you could have a car for 30 or 40 years made of metal and heavy, and it would have a, it would look like a spaceship that had gone around the galaxy a number of times. Little meteorites shooting through it. But nowadays we only have cars for a few years. They're made of plastics and computers, and they fail more rapidly. Not immediately. They last a lot. I think they last longer. They don't break in the first year or two, or three or four. So they last a comfortable distance, and then they are as useless as broken eggs. So anyway, I went out for a little walk and did a catalogue of all my injuries I thought I would share with you. So, do that, we'll come back again, talk a little bit about boots. Simply because that's what I almost accidentally said, and now I feel like I should attach myself to it. We'll talk a little bit about boots. I like how that rides. Back in a moment. I don't know about you, but I have these intervals of accidents. It's like a flock of birds swarming down from the trees. These short spans, a few days. But I go from very well to very poorly. I don't know if it's that I'm daydreaming more than normal, or there's something in the air distracting me, or the season is changing and I'm not quite on the ground with that. So, a brief catalogue of my injuries. Three or four days ago, I'm walking in the woods. It's getting dark. It's dark now, but I'm on a fairly wide, safe path. And I was walking probably later than I should have on a path that's probably rougher than I should be walking, perhaps during the day as well. So it's night and rough, and I fall. And I notice that the pinky finger, the most embarrassing of the fingers, of the right hand, the pinky finger may be the most embarrassing of the body parts, all inclusive. It's like a baby. It's a baby part. It never grew up. It's the same size and the same caliber of skill as when you're a baby. It's remained a baby throughout your entire life. It should be called the baby finger. I would like to see a museum exhibit, or perhaps an art exhibit, on all of the different pinky fingers of different people of the past, even living people, I would like to see a great panoply of pinky fingers, just to see whether there is any old, wise, dignified pinky finger. I submit to you that if you took all the pinky fingers in the world, laid them down on the ground, and then had to search through them and begin to determine their various ages, you'd come to the conclusion that they were all baby fingers. So I fell on my baby finger. And it hurt, but not more so than any other similar type accident. You fall, something hurts, that's how it goes. When you get older, you tend to roll over the pain of things a bit more. You know it's going to hurt, there it is. You have a safe distance, you don't go hopping around or screaming. It just hurts and there it is, and you stare at it and it stares at you, and then it fades a bit and you're off. Even while I was in the middle of the most pain of it, I was thinking about what I was writing, some story. I stood there suffering while my mind began to work on some small problem in the story that I was writing. As it turns out, I have broken the pinky finger. It is swollen and stiff and very tender and painful. I wrote to Dr. Steve. I didn't want to bother him. I was going to call him on the phone on his radio show to put my problem to good use, if he thought it was useful. Because I wondered if it was all right if I did nothing about this broken finger. So I wrote him, "Dear Dr. Steve, I haven't the money or the insurance and to go to the doctor. I don't want to pay. I can't pay. Is it okay if my pinky finger goes uncared for and is broken? Is there anything wrong with that? Can I die from that? Can I die from baby fingeritis? Can the bones move through my bloodstream and burst into my heart like shrapnel?" He assured me there was no possibility of death, but that I might lose mobility. And I'm fine with that, as that is where I'm at with most everything anyway. So might as well hasten the baby finger into its old age, ahead of all the rest. Go ahead, become paralyzed and arthritic. Show some age, old finger. So there was that, and then there was, just shortly after that, possibly the same day, I came back. I wanted to have some bread and butter, and I realized I'd accidentally put the bread in the freezer. I don't know why I did that. I don't do that. It's not. I know some people who keep lots of things in the freezer because they want to preserve it endlessly and safely. But I don't, and mine is usually empty. I don't even know why I looked there, but I did, and there it was. I took the bread out, and of course becomes this strange frozen pillow of bread. And I grabbed a knife to cut the pieces off, and the knife slid first with difficulty, then rapidly through the loaf, and I managed to slice into the below fingers, the bottom deck fingers. Of course, it's not a smart thing to do, but I did it. Every time I grab a knife, it's danger time. I don't have any caution. I stab it towards myself, trying to get at things. Every possible wrong thing you can do with a knife, I do. I shouldn't be allowed. I shouldn't have a license to knife, but they don't have this. So then, because of Dr. Steve, I have what's called a buddy splint on the broken pinky, where I've taped the pinky to it, the finger right beside it, its neighbor finger. Sort of middle-aged, permanently middle-aged bachelor finger. Always looking for a fun time. The sort of finger that might wear a toupee. So they're taped together. It's just household tape. It's not medical tape. And then I have two fingers on the other hand with these very old bandages. Hardly stick, and I had used the same household tape to make them adhere. So those two injuries. And then, I don't know, it's because of some lack of balance with the pinky finger and the knife fingers, but then my calf muscle in the left leg. Oh, I have to sneeze here. I heard once when I was a boy that when you sneeze, your heart stops. I imagine it always is a moment of death. I'm dead during the interval of the sneeze. I don't know if that's true, that the heart stops. And I don't remember if someone capable told me that, or just another boy, some terrible boy. And I've kept it with me like a fact. So my calf, I relate these things, they may not be related, but I've seen other calves. Perhaps it happened during the fall that the calves went out. I don't remember feeling it. Though it is true I have trouble feeling more than one pain. So if I had injured the finger and the calf at the same time, I would have only been able to focus on the baby finger. Probably. I don't know, that's a theory I'm suddenly having, that I can't experience two pains in my body. I'm not able to process that. But maybe I can, I just can't remember having experienced that. So the calf is out, the fingers are lanced, and deeply lanced. I could have had stitches. This is one of those cuts that went across the two fingers and went deeply into them so that they were immediately pouring out blood. In a very boring and irritating way. When you cut yourself and you get over it, it's boring. You think, oh, I have three days of these ridiculous fingers. And their top pains, their topmost pains. So I have trouble playing the piano and typing on the typer. That's what I call the typer. Sometimes the private words that you have for things that you don't ever say, that you don't want to say, intimate words, they come out. So I call it the typer. So there's that private word for you. I type on the typer. and my neck. Once or twice a year, I suppose this may happen to anyone, the neck is suddenly impossibly stiff. Usually it's one of those things where you wake up and you wonder, have I slept wrong? What's happened? It feels as though someone's taken a great iron bar and smashed you on the neck. You can't turn your head. There's a great deal of pain. But it feels like a muscle pain. Something has collapsed inside. It's very sore. As though all through the night my head was lifting barbells. So these are my pains. Neck, calf, baby finger, the other two. I have an ace bandage on the calf. Two band-aids on the left hand, the body splint on the right, and I'm wearing a scarf for the neck. It's just comfort. And it's cold enough that I can get away with it. But what can you do with a kangaroo when the kangaroo happens to be your own neck? You wrap it in a scarf. Kangaroos look very good in scarves. I think they're the only animal that actually can carry it off. Now, if you put a scarf on a crocodile, it's terrifying. Now, there's some animals that can wear neckties. A wolf. And wear a necktie. Horses can wear boots. Goats can wear top hats. Rabbits can wear monocles, I think. Rabbits can also wear vests. Because of my painful neck, I haven't noticed how beautiful it is tonight. But it is beautiful. It's a Milky Way night. Can't always see the Milky Way. Tonight, you can see the Milky Way. All right, my friends. So you know of my pains and my sufferings. I don't complain of them, they're all fine. And as I said, when you get older, pain is just mostly just boring and it prevents you from doing certain things to your fullest. And you must keep in mind that your fullest when you get older is your own least. So when I was younger, I'd be able to do very much, much, much more than I can now. Now what I'm capable of is a quarter cup's worth. And then you get hurt and you can only do a teaspoon. So I'm down to a teaspoon of work. That's fine. Teaspoon out. I was hoping I would sing a shanty. Pirate shanty. There are no shanties that go like this. Will you? Well, you are well. Will you? Ah, well, Riding alone on the sea, while the world of me. Riding alone on the sea, why don't you come with me? We'll sing a sea shanty, we'll sing a sea shanty. Sometimes you try to write a song about something like, when you try to write a shanty, you end up writing a song about writing a song about shanties, because you realize you can't do it. So you might set out to write a novel about a detective, and then instead you end up writing a novel about a writer who's writing a novel about a detective. You drop down a level. You say to yourself, I have not been able to figure it out in a primary sense, so I'll drop down a level. And look at the whole thing, me included. So I said I'd talk a little bit about boots. It's a promise that I would like to not keep. And I should have prepared, I should have thought to myself, well, I was discussing my injuries there on a little walk, what I might like to say about boots. And I think I would like to sum it up with a favorite moment from the film Glengarry Glen Ross. I believe it's Alan Arkin sitting with Ed Harris, and they're both very, very weary salesmen. Alan Arkin particularly weary. Ed Harris is equally weary, but has a lot more caffeine inside him. And we see his adrenaline and his sense of identity is like an amphetamine. So Ed Harris has a lot more purpose and drive and wants to get something and he doesn't know. It's the great salesman dilemma. So he's talking with Alan Arkin, and Alan Arkin's character is one of those conciliatory, agreeable sorts, very sympathetic, sad sack, who generally assents with anything. He's so beaten down, he says, yes, yes, oh yes, this is terrible here. Mitch and Murray are treating us so badly, I agree, we have to do something. So he's constantly echoing everything Ed Harris is saying. And sometimes he tries to echo Ed Harris before Ed Harris has finished his statement. So there's one line, Ed Harris is going along and he's going to say something about, we've got to get ourselves a new pair of shoes. At least that's what Alan Arkin thinks he's going to say. We've got to get ourselves a new pair of shoes. Instead, Alan Arkin tries to join together in this codependent way, an agreeable sympathy with his note. So what Ed Harris says is, we've got to get ourselves a new pair of boots. And as Alan Arkin is trying to join with him, he says, shoes, boots. Because he thinks Ed Harris is going to say shoes. But instead, Ed Harris says boots. So when Alan Arkin says the word before, Ed Harris gets there and then has to correct. Shoes, boots. Nodding his head the whole while. And that's what I'd like to say about boots. I would like, just for a moment, to return to the newspaper, the fact of it. I noticed the other day, I got a mailer, something in the mail, from, I can't remember the company, but they make objects that hold iPads. Well, they make office supplies and pens and things for your desk, but almost everything that they had, every page, had an iPad shoved into it. So it's almost the ubiquity of the iPad has become their ubiquity. Every single page is a thing that you stick your iPad in or holds it for you on your lap, either in the bath or in the bed, in the car, however you might, floating in front of you, tied to your chest. Every kind of gizmo that will hold it, cover it, keep it safe. Just looking at this catalogue of images, this glossy, almost magazine mailer, I realize how charmless all these things were. Not the iPad itself or these articles, but in the old days, in the old mailers, you'd have people sitting around on couches, and even in television commercials, American Express, Time magazine, you would see people sitting around their breakfast tables, or at cafes, flipping through the newspaper. Very romantic image for us. We loved that image, and any kind of commercial could stumble upon that. Somebody flipping through, happily flipping through the newspaper. Sometimes the product might require, you know, if it's for coffee, maybe it's a couple in bed on a Sunday morning going through the New York Times. You know, this is really not a complaint about technology or the modern day, really, as much as it is noticing what has gone away, what we've lost. We've lost many objects, records, newspapers, even books, physical books, that have a romantic, they have narrative quality for us. If you see them in public, they have a narrative quality. You rarely see someone at the cafe reading a newspaper, a physical newspaper. You see them with iPads, more and more with phones, so it's even less visible. What they're doing, staring at their hands. And so now, if you want to create a warm advertisement about people coming together, whiling away their pleasant Sunday morning, you can't do it because they're just sitting there with their phone. It doesn't lend itself any, there's no charm in it. There's no warmth, there's nothing human in that. It's not a picture you can hang in your heart. You can't do a good... There can be no great painting of someone holding their iPhone, but there can be a great painting of someone flipping through the newspaper. Now, of course, can there be a great painting of someone with an iPhone? Of course, yes. There could be an excellent painting of someone staring at their computer screen. It's only that there's a certain irony there. Not a beauty. What you'd be getting with those great paintings of someone holding their iPhone or they're staring at their computer would be a work of art that spoke to a kind of irony or a kind of loss, even a kind of loneliness or disconnection. It'd be very difficult to do an extremely heartwarming picture of someone staring at their iPhone. Not that the universe was cluttered with great masterpieces of newspaper gazers, but you could include a newspaper gazer in the background of your painting, someone at the corner of the diner, or even the stack of pages itself, the old ruffled stack. And we're losing the objects of our world. And not that I'm in principle a huge fan of objects. I believe I'm a fan of narrative and story, and I think as we walk through our lives we see less story about us. Even into the part of what I was saying about cars and people, we can't see our damages and injuries anymore, which are stories. I think it's enjoyable It's richer to see the cast, the arm sling, the great wad of bandages across the face, the pirate patch. So now, the newspaper, and why I've been studying it more closely. I don't exactly know what to say about it, or what. I have a possibility, let's say, that would require me to be better acquainted with the affairs of the day, public affairs, news and information. A position that I would hope would allow me to continue doing these Radio Ghost episodes more regularly, more securely. But it's not a strong, let's say it's a possibility, but it's not at all certain. But I'm in practice. I thought I should get into some practice with reading the paper, thinking about the figures in it, and talking about them, because I believe if I'm going to go forward, a little bit of public affairs will have to creep in. Can't all be walks in the woods, although that will always be there. It can't all be talks about the old days and newspapers and art. That will be there. I just have a sense I'll have to be more responsible, more aware of the world, in a balance with my awareness of self and life. I have no resentment of that. The subject doesn't matter. It's been a short moment of learning. A short, obey comes down the way, and all to call away. I'm sure to find my way back home. I'm sure to find. I'm sure to find, and that's where I lose my musical place. And so before we go, let me just say, shoes, boots, let me wish you slings and pirate patches. Let me encourage you to pick up a newspaper and ruffle it. Make your way through it. Have a moment of sympathy for the hard-pressed reporters. And let me at last bid you a good night. For it is tired and I am late. Always merry and bright, my friends. Always merry and bright. It's tired. I'm late. Your frozen fire turn out late. Tomorrow we'll slip through town, sat every turn up thing down. But now it's time to sleep. It's tired. I'm late. Untie your candles. Well, I just lit the skates. We're sleeping in sleep at light. Come dreams that we're sleeping right. But now it's time to sleep.
Hit a ball now. About all them dreams. Now it's time to sleep.